Burka, and I welcome you to my podcast Musik Leben. This is usually a German podcast, but I also do English episodes. I have studied classical singing, actually in the United States and in Vancouver, and I love to sing a lot of contemporary and experimental music. If you would like to know more about me, please look at my website www.irenekurke.de. I will put this into the show notes. In this podcast, I talk with you about themes all around contemporary music. I share with you behind the scenes insider knowledge, and I'm really interested to bring you the human beings out of the new music world closer. I'm always very thankful for all your feedbacks, mainly emails you write to me. Thank you so much for taking your time and letting me know what all these episodes do with you. I'm cooperating with the NMZ, the Neue Musikzeitung, which is one of the leading German music papers. Today I'm here and I'm excited and happy to actually celebrate the 5th birthday of this podcast. Sometimes I cannot believe myself that I have done it for such a long time, that I stuck with it even though there were times I was about to give up. But I'm here and I'm getting close to 200 episodes. And yeah, I can also look back very, very proudly. In today's episode, the musicologist Ryan Dehoney from Northwestern in Chicago is interviewing me. And I'm a big fan of Ryan because he has a very open and unusual approach to many things, and how he writes his books and how he teaches. And yeah, he's just such a special person for me. So I'm really very, very thankful that Ryan is here and, well, he's interviewing me, or we have a very nice talk today. So enjoy the interview, the talk with Ryan Dehoney.
Hello, Ryan. Hello, Ryan Dehoney. I really welcome you today into my podcast, Neue Musik Leben, and it's actually the second time you're here, but we have a special opportunity to do this. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Irena. It's lovely to be back on Neue Musik Leben, celebrating 5 years of your amazing work with the podcast, interviewing so many central, interesting figures in the world of new music. So let me first say congratulations on this wonderful achievement.
Oh, thank you so much. Wow, thank you. I want to add first, before I turn everything over to you and I'm then open to your questions, that you are an associate professor at Northwestern University in Chicago. You're also the director of graduate music studies, and you have written many, many books, and they're all amazing, mainly also about Feldman. I think there are 2 or 3 books already. Also know about Julius Eastman. You also plan a long-term work about Wandelweiser. And we met in Düsseldorf a few years ago before the weird pandemic. And we performed together there. We talked a lot, which was also amazing. And I also remember that I think it was often on the last day that you presented something to us, or you also brought or started a discussion with us about very interesting themes. And I also admire so much how you look at things, or what connections you draw. And so I'm really excited what you will, or we make now together. So yeah. Ryan, it's up to you now.
Okay. Thanks so much for the intro, Irena. I think for me, I've really, just to reiterate, like, how much I've valued the friendship that's developed between us over the last few years. I think it's been something, as I'm also a singer, though certainly not one as accomplished and professionalized as you. I think it's been wonderful to connect with you both intellectually and on a level of practice, and just to, also be really inspired by your work and sort of, really appreciate the breadth of what you accomplish as an artist, and simply just how inspiring it is. I think I've learned so much from listening to you, and especially as I've become interested in the music of Wandelweiser, like, right, your interpretations of that music are really foundational for how we hear that music by, Eva Maria Hoben or Anton Bruegger. You've done such great work interpreting them and bringing their music to us. So I feel a lot of gratitude and a lot of honor. It's a big honor to kind of talk to you about your artistry and your work. So let's talk about your artistry and your work. I think for me, I again, to sort of point out, I mean, I just want to point out how sensitive I feel your interpretations are a lot. But I think beyond interpreting the work of others, could you maybe describe how you think about your voice itself? Like, what are its qualities? Describe your voice for me, and what you notice about it, and what you maybe value about it, what you find frustrating about it.
I mean, it's so, in a way, it's hard to talk about my voice because it's so much part of me. And I think that maybe people looking from the outside can say much more about me. And I think in many ways, and also in singing, I'm very intuitive. So I know even less. And it was also one aspect interesting. I was always singing also as a child. And when I then got into school, and then I would practice in my high school, and it was in fifth grade, and there came in a teacher for the bass, and he also played at a very good orchestra, and he came in and he's like, "Oh my God, you have such great intonation. This is amazing." And I thought, like, what is he talking about? And the thing is, with intonation, I never think about it. But I know for me, it's so natural, or that's also something people often reply. It's so cl clear and clean. And when I teach voice myself, I never talk about intonation because for me, it's also something. I think most people who come to me to sing, they have an idea. And if the intonation is off, it's not, it's more at oftentimes a technical problem. It's not that they don't hear it. So I work on the technical side, and I also realized when my singers or my students were performing also with other people, they always had the best intonation. But it's also something I cannot really grasp. And we also know that intonation is in a part of the brain you cannot even access really. It's and so that's also one thing. What I'm saying, it's like I'm living with this voice that's part of me, and I love it, and I always loved it, and I always loved singing. And when I was also a child, I learned every song I could because that was just joy for me. And I mean, it's so hard to describe what I feel or what maybe people feel when they hear me. I hear that I have a very clear voice. I have a very warm voice. And also with, I mean, you talked about Wandelweiser. I mean, I think I'm good actually at singing soft. And I have a very amazing quality in it. I'm maybe not as good as singing really loud, 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 loud. That's maybe not a strength of mine. I like coloring. I like different expressions. I really, really enjoy that. To also play with my voice and try out different techniques and all of that. And also I'm amazed with music like Wandelweiser, what my breath can really do. And there also were interesting things when I started doing this. I think when I did the first CD with Jörg Frey, where he also played the clarinet too, and I practiced those long notes. And, you know, it has to do with your breath support and all that. And after this project, I sang very virtuosic Mozart arias with lots of coloratura. And the coloraturas were suddenly so good. And I'm like, I didn't even practice any fast notes.
Yeah.
But something changed through the breathing with those long notes. And I later also, I think they also come kind of easy to me, because later on I realized that it's not so easy for some singers. And I also sometimes got recordings from people where they wanted feedback, and I could hear that they really have are struggling with this long breath thing. So I guess maybe that's also something I'm good at, and I always like to dive into those pieces, into those atmospheres and whatever it implies.
Yeah. We're hearing, I think, some of the same things, right? This warmth, this clarity, this kind of incredible delicateness that you can achieve in terms of dynamics. There was an interesting thing you brought up about technique, and this is just a selfish moment when I want to talk about intonation and technical problems with intonation. Because so when you describe, you know, intonation as resulting from a technical problem, like what is that technical problem usually, and how do you fix it?
It can be different things. I mean, it can be the breathing. It can have to do something with your tongue, with tension in the jaw. I mean, there is so much you can address, but I only address those things because I feel. I mean, I know a lot of choir directors talk a lot about intonation, and that oftentimes when you say bad intonation, that people get even more stressed, and then the intonation gets even worse. And I also feel that, I mean, you have a pitch and you have those overtones. So you have like a grounding note or the yeah. real note with the overtones. And I also feel that it has to click in. There is a certain order. And when you listen to this and a singer has achieved that, then you can really relax. Because there are also singers where I say, I mean, I hear it when other people don't sing, have a good intonation. But sometimes I can hear that maybe the ground note is correct, but things above are off. And then I'm still getting a little stressed because I'm like, something is off here. Or I had recently listened to someone who did overall a good performance, but for me, I think there was an overtone spectrum missing for me personally. Maybe for other listeners, it's different. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it sounded like flat the whole time, even though I don't think this person sang flat.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess, again, I'm very intuitive. So next time I see you, I should give you a lesson.
You have no idea how much I would love that. Yeah, no, I think that would be very, very helpful. But I think that's what's so, I mean, you're bringing up some really interesting points about, I mean, that are somewhat, I don't know, philosophical for me, but that are also very practical, right? The sense of one's voice, your voice in particular, right, having a richness or having a kind of expansiveness that, or multiplicity, let's say, to use a philosophical term, that's coming about through a really rich overtone production. And these other qualities that you're describing, right, warmth, focus, you know, clarity, right, that they kind of provide this kind of foundation that then allows you to transform, right, to, as you were saying, kind of play with your voice. So I mean, I guess my question is, like, beyond those kinds of qualities of clarity, warmth, good pitch, and is there something else more fundamental, maybe sort of, I don't know, philosophical or spiritual, or a way you think about your voice that is important to you?
I mean, I spend time with it every day, also when I speak, like right now. And I usually also practice every day. And it's in a way, it's part of my morning routine where I also like meditate in a real meditating sense. And then I go to the piano and rehearse, experience myself, or see if I can stretch things or things can get better. And on the other hand, I'm also always looking how things can get easier. If a certain whatever jump or coloratura or something can be easier. And I also when I practice, not then on stage, I also like to use lots of body movements because there are body movements or certain things that support good singing or good breathing. And then I also feel that to sing or to improve your singing, it's very brave because in a way you don't know what comes out, but it comes out. And also when you change behaviors or you let go of bad behaviors, there's always then this phase of a risk because your body maybe doesn't know exactly yet where to go now, but you just have to do it and you have to jump there. And so for me also singing or teaching singing is a big letting go because you let go of all unnecessary stuff because I mean we live a life and we have whatever a certain posture. But not everything we do, how we stand, is good for our singing. And so when you work with your voice, you strip off all this stuff. And I find that amazing. I think it's also in a way good for my health. And you get to know yourself so well. I mean, that's at least how my path went. And for me, also good voice lessons are the ones where things get easier. I mean, I can maybe learning a difficult piece can be difficult, yes, but to sing well, I feel it's gotten easier and easier and easier and easier, and that's great.
That's amazing. I mean, you said something really interesting. I mean, two things super interesting, right? This idea that more and more as it gets easier, there's this kind of letting go that happens. But I mean, especially physically, this is something I've been working with Joan LaBarbera's vocal warm-up for a while, which is a very physical warm-up, which is about sort of releasing tension and such. But there's another kind of, a really important thing you said, which is that there's an element of risk too in this. You're not quite sure what's going to come out at any particular moment. And I was thinking, right, you've made a specialty of doing music that I think requires that of you in a lot of ways, especially your association with the work of John Cage, right? Can you tell me a little bit about how this letting go and how this kind of uncertainty has manifested in some of your performances, maybe a work of Cage's, or if you've done improvisation work, how this kind of unpredictability shows up and sort of how you respond to it?
I mean, in a way, every performance is unpredictable. I don't know how I really feel. I mean, I trust then my muscles that they have done it often enough. And even if maybe I'm internally excited, I can feel that sometimes my body knows what to do. But it's always like stepping on raw eggs or something. And I mean, maybe there are situations where I might feel, but I don't think it's true that I have it more under control. But I don't think it really is. I mean, maybe, yeah, I have prepared it. But I think there's always an uncertainty. And definitely when you improvise, but I really enjoy improvising also a lot to be in this moment and And I also like to challenge myself. I was never a person who wants to do the same things over and over. I mean, I've done that I have sang pieces quite a lot of times, or have been in productions where I would ever sing it 15 or 30 times. But I'm a person who gets bored very easily. I'm very curious. That's also probably why I'm in contemporary music. And so when I have to duplicate it again and again, I think I try to find myself the new excitement or a new risk, or say, can I do it a little faster or a little slower, or something that I challenge myself, because I guess I want it as fresh as possible, even for me in this moment. And I mean, I think you have been there. That was a big challenge for me. I internally I was dying. I was doing this piece with Burkhard Zeller, the cello, and it was what is it, John of the Cross, or how is it called
The
in
John of the
English?
Cross, yeah, of Canticle
And
Spirituelle, yeah.
by Antoine Beuger, and I did it. We did it is a very long piece, and we did every night a section of it, and I also enjoyed every evening. And the last evening, I think you were there, there was next door a Turkish or a wild wedding party. It was loud, and I'm like, I cannot sing there. How do I get my pitches? It's awful. And then Antoine also tried to find the best place. I think all places were challenging because the wedding was loud. And I was sitting there, and internally I was really dying. I was dying, I was crying. I'm like, I don't want to be there at all. And so I went through this, but I then got the feedback from you all that in some way you really enjoyed it, or this also weird situation. And so that's something I really, I guess I had to struggle with myself and get out of my comfort zone.
Yeah, I mean, that was a, I was there, and that was a very challenging. I mean, it's hard to have kind of four on the floor techno pulsing through the wall, to when you're doing this incredibly delicate music that doesn't really, that of course is, I mean, this is something I was kind of curious. This is a technical thing about that piece, but I mean, for the listeners, right? It's a series of duos for voice and cello based on a poem by St. John of the Cross. But it seems to me, right, that the alignment between voice and cello is not fixed. Is that that's correct, right? And does it change every time you do it? So you're the harmonies of the piece are actually changing every time, or do you and perhaps fix it?
No,
The
it can change every time. Yes,
oh
yes,
wow,
yes.
that's
Yes,
incredibly difficult.
it's an amazing piece. I hope I can
Yeah,
do it
it
again,
is.
but it's quite delicate, yes.
So thanks. Yeah, that's really interesting and helpful to think about. I guess maybe we can kind of talk a little bit about, since we brought up Antoine, we brought up Bandelweiser, there are obviously these very important kinds of relationships or communal relationships that are sustaining your practice. And I maybe just, maybe we could talk a little bit about the role of friendship and community in your work as a singer, and sort of how that's maybe transformed over the years, or if it's always been a constant, or what's its role in your music making?
I think for me, because music has to do with being open. And so for me, I guess I always get kind of close to people when I work or perform with them. And that's maybe also just how I am. Maybe it could also work differently. And I'm a person, for me, also the way how you get there or get to the performance or the concert is important, not just the concert itself. And for me, it's also important to work with people who are respectful and friendly and supportive. And when I had to do with people, there were not many who were maybe bossy or trying to control something. Then I got somewhat tight, and I usually stopped then working with those people. I did. I finished my performance, but then I know that it's not for me. I know other people can handle this much better, but for me, it's the whole thing is important that I can really do my best and trust or let myself surrender into it. And so there have been people who I've been working with for quite a while. I mean, they're different settings. Sometimes they're settings, you know, where people, composers or organizers, plan something and they invite me, and I've worked with them a couple of times. And that's also great because each time you get to know them better or their music and you understand it better. And I also enjoy it. I have this with Christina Messner, with Eva Maria Hum, or with Antoine, where you also can develop something together, that I'm not just the person who's asked, okay, please sing this piece. That's fine too. But since I'm also creative, I also like those settings where people also want to know, what are you interested in? And so, like the persons, the people I just mentioned, they're people where we really play back and forth, and that's amazing for me, and I really like this. And then one person has an idea or something, and then you develop it, and I really, really enjoy that. And I mean, Antoine also has inspired me in so many ways. I mean, also that I do this solo work, I singing by myself. That's something that Antoine pushed me into it. And at first, I was really afraid, and I was not sure if I really want to do this. And then it is amazing and a great gift. And I also love singing by myself. I also like performing with other people. And so I'm always also thankful when there come great ideas or impulses from people that I can react to, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is cool. Let's try it out and see what happens. And also, I mean, you have been to the Klangraum. I mean, that's also a very supportive environment that you can also try out things, even though maybe sometimes you don't know if the result will be good or great or amazing. But to just also have this opportunity, I mean, especially in the Western world, we're so much trained on don't do mistakes and don't do failures. I think you Americans are better with it than we Germans, but I think in that way it's also great to just get this opportunity, like, okay, maybe this was not for a composer the best piece or not the best performance, but sometimes this piece is so important to lead to the next piece, and the next piece will be super, super amazing. And to get this opportunity to also grow, that's something I think that Antoine Beuger and really established there. And I guess that's also what why so many people love coming there, and yeah, can be open and really, as I said before, risk something and see what comes out.
Yeah, I think, I mean, so much of kind of finding a space like Klangraum is really about taking away that pressure of being, you know, quote unquote performance, right? It's a different kind of attitude or approach to music making that is, you know, I think realistically a bit more like either a kind of personal ritual or, you know, It has certain qualities that I think change what we expect from it, and what we're listening for, right? I think there's, I remember the kind of intensity that came with listening to you perform these works by Toby Rundle. I think it was just these wonderful psalm settings that were so spare and that were so beautiful, and that in any other context, right, would have been completely either misheard or misunderstood, or and so there's so much to be said for that space of, a single voice, working and being heard by people. And is that we I mean, we've talked a lot about risk, but I mean, so what were your hesitancies about singing more by yourself? Obviously, it's risky because you're exposed, but were there other concerns you had about putting yourself on display as an unaccompanied singer?
Yeah, I really felt that in a way you were very naked standing there. I did not know how it would go with pitch and breathing, even though, I mean, you have to really hear it internally to do this, but it's great. I can do it, and I think I could also recommend it to other singers because it's the maybe you get really strong with your intonation if you do that. It felt at first like I'm jumping from whatever, a 10 meter thing down into the water or something, a big cliff. I think I really didn't know. And I think I was afraid. I mean, the programs were maybe whatever, 50, 60 minutes. That maybe it would be boring to just listen to one voice. And it never was boring for the audience. They often told me afterwards, "You could have sang so much longer, could have lasted 3 hours, we would have listened." And then I think it also made me realize how powerful our human voice or how a human singing voice is, and that it is so touching and it is so natural. I mean, lots of people sing, even if they sing under the shower or they hopefully sing something for their children. And yeah, it's really part of us because each of us has a voice. And so that when all this amazing feedback came, I was really touched, and I really knew then that I want to explore this road further. And then, yeah, many new pieces showed up and are still showing up and experimenting in any way. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, this idea of right pieces showing up, I'm kind of comes back to this earlier question. We talked a little bit about what you hear in your voice, but when you get a piece, right, that's been written for you, what do you think, say by somebody not, say, maybe not Jörg or not Eva Maria or Antoine, right? Someone outside of the Wandelweiser community, when somebody gives you a piece that is written for you, what do you think they're hearing, or what are they putting in the piece that they think you can do well?
I think it's so different because each composer is so different. I mean, sometimes they just want to ever stimulate my virtuosic side or so, and I'm like, okay, this looks like lots of work. Okay, cool. They trust that I can do that. Sometimes I can really feel that this is my piece, and it really matches and it fits well, and then that's really exciting because then I also enjoy the practicing of it much more. I mean, sometimes it also is like, by like, okay, what is this about? What do they think about voice, or what do they think about me? And I'm like, okay, let's see where it goes. I mean, sometimes I can be disappointed a little. Sometimes it changes when I practice it, and sometimes like, okay, this is interesting. And I'm also amazed when people really have a feeling. I mean, it's great when the pieces, sometimes the pieces were not written for me, but then I sing them or I got asked something and I look at the score and I'm like, this is just my piece. So that's also heaven. And when I get those pieces, but on the other hand, I don't mind again being challenged. So if there's something in the piece, I'm like, okay, do they really think this? Okay. But then I have the chance to grow again, because then I stick with it and find my way through it. And some people have a really good feeling for breathing, or also about the range. And I mean, you said I should not talk about one-to-one, but I have
just for variety.
Interesting story with him about my voice. It might be that it was the piece that I mentioned earlier with Jörg Frey, Tutu. When I got this piece, I said to him, there were so many notes which were kind of in the transition of my voice, where it can be also kind of cracky, or it will not be as clear. And I looked at it and I said to Antoine, you know what, if you put it like a third or a fourth higher, I can shine more and I feel much more comfortable. And he said, I know that. I have written it on purpose like this. I know that this is not comfortable for you. I know you won't shine, but look at the text. This text is not about shining. It's about this fragile thing. And when I knew that, then I also said, okay, let's dive into that. Let's again go into this uncertainty, the risky part.
Yeah.
And that was then how it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's a really great example of sort of, someone who clearly understands your voice to such a degree that they know how to, you know, work with it to their artistic ends. I think that's really beautiful. Hopefully it wasn't too uncomfortable though.
No. And also doing it with Jörg, who also has this great calmness. It was amazing to just perform with him. Yeah.
No, I think certainly. I mean, are there other meaningful experiences that you might want to share with us? That, I mean, something maybe like the Antoine example, or, you know, something maybe drastically different with like a different kind of aesthetic value, you know, something that's, you mentioned this kind of virtuosity that can be called upon, or that composers seem to call upon you for. And is there a piece like that that has required such immense virtuosity from you that was rewarding or frustrating?
You often have to practice a lot, but I also enjoy virtuosic stuff. I just have to prepare it differently, and then it's this kind of challenge: can I do it, or how fast can I do it? And then again, you have to find ways maybe where whatever the jaw, the tongue, has to be even more relaxed that you can get up to the speed. Since I like exploring my body, then I also enjoy this a lot, because I'm like, oh my God, this is now getting better. And for me also, when I learn and sing music, I have a very wide spectrum of music. And for me, it's like putting on a different dress. And I think I could not just, I mean, I love singing Wandelweiser music, but I'm not the person who could just do it 100%, because then I cannot wear those other interesting dresses. So for me, it's the mix of it. And as I mentioned also with the Mozart aria, in a way they inspire each other for me as well, because I think also when I sing virtuosic music, I think I still have probably much more inner calmness or stillness in me than maybe some other singers, because of my work with Wandelweiser.
Yeah.
And that I don't get too stressed out or so. And because something, I guess, in the maybe origin of producing the sound is then the same. And it doesn't matter if it's a fast or a high or a low or a slow long note. And yeah, I like putting on different dresses.
That is a great metaphor for that. So let's talk about putting on dresses though in a different way, which is, you do a lot of curatorial work as well on concert programming. And so I'm interested, we've talked a lot about certain qualities of voice that to some degree are general, right? That allow you, that are skills or abilities or aspects of your voice that allow you to, let's say, do costume changes pretty regularly. But I'm interested when you were kind of taking on this role of curator, what are the things, the say musical values, aesthetic values, personal values that show up when you're putting together a program? I guess what is it in music that what is it in music that you like to hear? What do you like to hear in the music that you
You mean
pull
now
together?
as when I curate as a for myself or when I
I
listen to
guess
someone else?
both. We can talk about both. I mean, there's, you like a variety is indeed the spice of life with your choices of repertoire. And I'm kind of curious though, maybe when you're thinking about putting together a coherent program or organizing concerts with other people, what are some of the things that you value?
I guess I'm again very intuitive, so I have to see how I can put it into words. I guess I have a feeling what maybe fits to the occasion or to the whole, and then pieces come into my head. And then it's a decision if you, whatever, stay more in one realm that you say, okay. This is all about more quiet pieces, or if I make the choice that it's all pieces are sung in that I really sing in a classical way, or if I really want to go more to show whatever extended techniques or speaking or noisy parts, and if it's about showing the most contrast or not. And sometimes I'm also led by themes that I have, whatever an internal topic or so. I mean, sometimes it also depends on who is part of it, what maybe fits to the other people or what pieces are out there. Or sometimes I got asked for, I hope it works out, for a festival this year where they also invite like an artist in residence who then proposes pieces. And maybe also because I have been singing for a while, I also proposed a few pieces I always wanted to sing, to just, let's say, I have sung it. And so I think now sometimes I also look, or I approach it like this. Or last year, I mentioned to a conducting friend that I really wanted to sing, just to have done it. And I love them, the Berlioz folk songs, because I haven't sang it before. And then she made it possible. And so, yeah, sometimes I know also look what pieces are still waiting for me. And so there are so many different approaches. And the weird thing is sometimes too, this one friend I just mentioned, she often puts programs together where when I read it on the paper, I'm like, this is so wild and different. This is not gonna work because it's so many different music epochs and times and eras. And I'm like, okay. But she has, I guess, how she presents it then, and how she also gets to the audience. She sometimes also talks in between. I find in a very charming way. And when I'm part of it or I listen to it, it works somehow. Even though I would say maybe in other occasions, I'm like, you cannot program like this. And I guess I'm also sometimes trying out things because I think we're in Germany, we're still also maybe somewhat dogmatic, and we still have this, whatever the what the terms are. We have the E and the U music. E is ernste Musik, serious music, and U is like Unterhaltungsmusik, more the, I don't know, entertaining, whatever it is, pop music or something. And there is this division. And I think we have a lot of it still here. I mean, some of the younger composers, they kind of break it. But when I was, for example, whatever, Huddersfield or Glasgow or singing there at festivals, they have such a big range of music. And I'm like, is this gonna work? I sang their Wandelweise, and after me, I think there was like, I don't know, punk rock or something. But the audience loves it. And so I sometimes wonder too if maybe we were too narrow-minded here in Germany, and maybe we could also take it further. So there's so many ideas.
Yeah, no,
I
I
don't
think
know what my next program would be like.
it's good. But I mean, I remember in your interview with Tim Rutherford Johnson that you had mentioned, and this was a couple of years ago, but that you had wanted to do the Barrio folk songs, and it seems like it's happened. Has it happened already? Did it happen? How
Yes,
was
in
that? What was the
September.
experience like for you? That's wonderful. How was it for
I
you?
loved it. I want to sing it again. I really love those songs, and I think they match me. And I also was, I mean, then I research again about Kathy Barbarian, and I mean, there is her recording also on YouTube. And I mean, in a way, she looks so funny with all her whatever she wears, her hair and everything. But I still think her interpretation is one of the most amazing ones. It's so alive and so real, and I just, yeah, it's she's just such an amazing artist.
Yeah, I've been especially thinking about I've been teaching a John Cage class here at Northwestern with his archive, which we have a large part of his archive here. And so I've had these students who have been very drawn to his relationship with Barbarian. So they've worked with her letters that are in the archive, and we've sort of, gotten I've been thinking a lot about their relationship and appreciating her artistry, and especially someone who writes breaking down this barrier between the serious and the supposedly entertaining, right? I think she was really a genius in figuring out ways to do that, especially these Beatles arias. You should sing the Beatles
I did them, and I
arias.
didn't know that they existed because this
Yeah,
conductor,
yeah,
she then
yeah.
looked what else could we do, and then
Uh-huh.
she found those Beatles songs,
Yeah.
and it's the most amazing like arrangement I know, because it sounds so Baroque in a very beautiful way, and it's still Beatles, and it's not like cheesy or dumb or anything.
Yeah.
We had so much fun. They're
That's amazing.
just
Oh
super.
wow, that's great. So maybe in like as a way to wrap up, we can maybe talk about maybe very just, where you are now. What did you work on this morning, and what is upcoming for you in the new year?
What is coming for me this year? I mean, I just my third book came out. This is amazing.
Congratulations. Yeah.
And I also have finished, but this is now with my publisher, a kind of a small book. It also will be in German and in English about like extended vocal techniques, something
Wow.
like that.
Great.
And something short and to the point. And yeah, in my podcast, I mean, people notice that I interview a lot of singers. And yeah, there are some great concerts coming up. Some also with my bass singer colleague, Martin Wistinghausen. I don't know, is it now 3 or 4 years? We sing in a duo, the bass voice and the high
Wow.
soprano voice.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is too that I have a quite good chest voice, and he has a good falsette. And there's this area we can meet, and it kind of sounds like very androgyne when we sing there. And so I'm looking forward to those concerts. I'm doing some Hildegard von Bingen. I'm actually doing Dieter Schnebel piece again, I've done
Oh,
before.
cool.
And yeah, visiting Nicolas Bras, who also is a very close composer friend of mine who moved back to the beautiful Bodensee. It's one of the greatest lakes in Germany.
Oh, wow.
It sits in, Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. And there's piece Benediktionen, and I think I've sang it now like 20 times or so, even
Wow.
more. And he also says it's one of the most performed pieces he has. And
Oh, okay.
basically, I'm performing it.
Yeah.
It's also so
Yeah.
cool to have a new music piece and really be very familiar with it. And
Yeah, to have it in your body
because,
that
you
way.
know, oftentimes you just do it once and then it goes back into the closet. And so every piece you can do more than once, you get deeper and into it, and you know it more and you're more familiar with it. And I mean, there are some great things coming up. On the other hand, I mean, we're still in very strange and challenging times. My last 2 years, they also started kind of calm. There were not as many bookings as I had before Corona or the COVID. And but then both years were really good because things came in later or people booked me more spontaneously. So I'm excited how
Yeah.
this year will be and turn out, and I hope you come to Düsseldorf.
Yeah, I'm checking my resources and it's looking good. So, well, I think that's a good place maybe for us to wrap it up. But thanks for your insight and your wisdom and of course your podcast. So, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Ryan, for asking me so many interesting and deep questions, and that we had this great talk. And I'm sure we will continue it in some way,
Yes, for
officially
years
or
to come.
just for us. And yeah, wish you a great day, and thank you for
Yeah.
taking this time.
My pleasure.
This was the interview from today. I hope that it inspired you, and please send me your emails, send me your feedback, because I love to interact with you. Thank you very much that you tuned in with me today. I really, really hope that you liked it. And please tell your friends and colleagues about this podcast. I thank you very much. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene.